Hey, everybody. Welcome to a special midweek episode of the Air Raid Podcast, episode 116, in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. It is with a heavy heart that I come to you on this special occasion. In this shorter episode, we will be celebrating the life and the music of a very dear and old friend of mine who passed away on Friday, September 31st, 2012. We will be celebrating the life and music of my friend, Kelly Dickerson. And I will be sharing some childhood memories and then also sharing some of his music by the group The Celibacy Club, which Kelly so thoughtfully left behind on the internet for us to find. These stories that I'm going to tell are, you know, they're going to be from my perspective. I'm going to try to do them justice, try to stay unbiased, and try to inject some good memories into myself, for I have been quite a wreck the past few days. It's even taken me a couple tries to get this show started, and get myself talking without breaking down. So I apologize if that happens a little bit later on. But I hope you enjoy this. I wanted to put this out there, celebrate Kelly's life, really the only way that I know how, by putting it out on the fake radio airwaves and putting it out into the world. I'm not quite sure if Kelly would, you know, if he were still around, if he would even appreciate something like this being done about him or for him. He was a very quiet man when I knew him, and he was a quiet kid as well. Didn't share a lot of emotion. Didn't share a lot of his feelings, things like that. But I'd like to think that he would appreciate me doing this and letting all of you hear his art. So, without further ado, let's hear some from Kelly Dickerson and the Celibacy Club. This song is called "Sloped Movement," and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Please stay with us.
Oh,
I had known Kelly for a long, long time. Our moms used to work together at the same hospital there in Bremerton, Washington, both RNs. And I remember some of the earliest memories that I have is being so excited when Kelly was going to come over. So excited, just elated. He was my best friend as a kid. His mom would bring him over early, early in the morning because she would have these weird work hours. And she needed somebody to kind of babysit, you know, for lack of a better term. He wasn't a baby. But somebody to watch over him, get him out to the bus stop and get him off to school. So Kelly would come over sometimes at around, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes around 4:30. And I would just be so excited that I would wake up at the sound of that door opening and the sound of his mother, Kathy, saying, "Hi, Pam. Good morning, Pam." Saying goodbye to Kelly, kissing him on the forehead, and then leaving for work. And Kelly would, you know, inevitably he would come in and fall asleep on the couch. I don't think he was as excited as I was to be over at my house that early on a weekday, on a school day. But I was always so excited about that. And it happened the other way around, too. I would be brought over when my mom would have to work, and my dad was away at work. I would be brought over to Kelly's house early in the morning. Remember, have very fond memories of eating breakfast together and just being like, this is the best, having a friend. It was kind of, you know, it was akin to having a friend stay the night on a school night, which was forbidden, of course. But our parents were very close back then, very close. And growing up in a small town of Indianola, it was, you know, everybody kind of stuck their neck out for each other. We helped each other out a lot, which is something that I find I'm severely lacking at this age and in this city. But always have those memories, right? Those memories of those better times, I guess. Not to say that these times are bad. But Kelly, like I said before, Kelly was always very quiet. My dad would always try to get Kelly to smile for pictures and things like that, but he never would. And it would make my dad so angry. I just remember he would get so annoyed. I shouldn't say so angry. I've told some stories about my father on the past in this show, which kind of make him out to be a tyrant. Which in my teenage years, he could have been considered one. But he wasn't that bad, especially when we were younger. Kelly would never smile for my father. I think somewhere in the back of his head, he never told me why. But I think he was. It was just kind of a big FU to dads at that time. Kelly's dad wasn't around too much when he was younger. I know later on in life he forged a relationship and they actually ended up working together on the same commercial fishing boat that Kelly eventually lost his life on last Friday. But I remember being as a child never knowing who Kelly's dad was. And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, Kelly was so quiet. Because he didn't have a father figure to, you know, lean upon when times were tough. And you needed that as a young boy, right? Everybody needs that as a young boy. You need that strong shoulder to lean on when you're a kid. And Kelly didn't have that. And, you know, thinking back to a lot of the times, I mean, we had some great, great times as kids in the small town of Indianola. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful place to grow up. We could always go down to the beach. We could go search around the woods, get rashes from walking through patches of stinging nettles, trying to build forts. swinging off rope swings 30 feet above these crevasses. It was amazing, and it was a wonderful, wonderful time to grow up. Nobody was afraid of their child getting picked up by some stranger, right? It was a different time. It was a different place, that's for sure. Sometimes I go back to Indianola, and it's not much has changed. There's definitely a lot more new faces that I haven't seen before, which bugs me sometimes. I got to be honest, right? We're all being honest here. It does. Sometimes I'll show up to Indianola, I'll be like, I don't know this person. Who is this person? And they're obviously looking at me the same way, but I grew up there, right? I have the power. I'm a local. But I don't feel like... I never had the sense that Kelly thought about the town that way. He was just living day to day. Just living his life. Kelly had an older brother named Casey. And Casey was, man, he was a lot older from what I can remember. I think he could have been a good, like, I don't know, 5-6 years older than us. Maybe even more than that. But I remember one day in first grade, Kelly and I had the same first grade class. And Kelly was an amazing artist, even as a small child. He was so good at drawing. And he was so insanely smart, too. But he kept that to himself quite a bit. And one day, we were doing these book reports, and we had to draw these pictures of our favorite books, right? And I think I probably had some sort of stick figure on mine and then lied about whatever book that I hadn't read and was supposed to. I don't even remember having a favorite book back then. It was probably like Star Wars, the one that came with the record and had the little R2-D2 sound to indicate a page turn. But Kelly had Calvin and Hobbes as his favorite book. And he had this little piece of paper. And he tried to explain it to everybody. But nobody got it. Nobody got what it was, what it was supposed to be, right? This kid that had, his best friend was a teddy bear who came to life only in the kid's presence. Never when anybody else was around. And they went on these amazing adventures, right? Everybody knows Calvin and Hobbes. Calvin and Hobbes, at that point, I had never heard of it. But Kelly's older brother had introduced him to it. And from that point on, I became the biggest Calvin and Hobbes fan because Casey Dickerson had all the Calvin and Hobbes books. And we spent hours up in Kelly's bedroom just flipping through these Calvin and Hobbes books, learning about the adventures of Spaceman Spiff, which I still think back of on fondly, very fondly. He also had all these Tintin books, right? You guys have probably seen the movie that came out. Let's see, who was it? Steven Spielberg. Steven Spielberg made this animated movie, Tintin. Well, Tintin was based on these old French comic books. These graphic novels that came out in like the 20s and the 30s about a boy and his dog who would go on these crazy adventures and solve mysteries. And they were great. They were so good. And they were so long. And we would stay up into the late, late hours of the evenings on a Saturday just reading Calvin and Hobbes and looking through Tintin books. I don't think either of us really read them. They were just too involved, but the pictures were great. That's for sure. I can't help but think that the reason Kelly liked Calvin and Hobbes so much and identified with Calvin was because he didn't have a lot going on at home, right? He was so quiet. I tend to think that maybe he had a special friend that nobody knew about and nobody could see that he would go on adventures in the woods with and fly to space on his imaginary spaceship. This song is called This Means Something by the Celibacy Club. I'm having a lot of trouble saying that right now. The Celibacy Club. Great name, right? This Means Something by Kelly Dickerson. We'll be right back with more. Kelly and my birthdays were 20 days apart. My birthday being on June 26th, Kelly's being on June 6th, 20 days older than me. And at some times he would hold that over my head like a carrot above a donkey in a cartoon. But it was great though. We both had our birthdays in June, that meant kind of a double birthday for the most part. Although Kelly also always seemed to have more friends than I did at those things, from what I can remember. But I do remember one time in particular. We had just finished sixth grade, and at that time we were at our elementary school in Suquamish Elementary. It was kindergarten through sixth, and we had been at that school for so long, and we had finally got out, and it was the summer before seventh grade, We were down in my parents' basement having a good time. Kelly's birthday was coming up soon. And I think if I do my math right, we were both about to turn 13. I think. Maybe it was 12. No, it was 13. And Kelly was wearing some sort of sweatshirt or sweater or something like that, and he went to go and take off his sweatshirt. And I caught a glimpse of his armpit. And there, in smack dab in the middle of Kelly Dickerson's armpit, was an armpit hair. I was so excited for him. And jealous. That was Kelly's first pube. Found in the rodent's basement, in his armpit. And I was a little bit jealous because I thought that, boy, I'm about to turn 13 too. I better have one. And so Kelly directed me to take my shirt off as well, and we would check. And lo and behold, there was one armpit hair in mine as well. And I was so happy that we had found that together. It was also indicative of what we were about to embark on in our lives. We were leaving the little kids' elementary school, going to the big junior high. We were going to have lockers and combinations to remember, girls to meet, new faces all around us. And we were gonna embark on that journey as men. We had armpit hair. Leaving elementary school as children and entering junior high as men. Together. We did a lot together. Our parents were very pushy when it came to getting us off of our butts and into some sort of organized sport. We were both forced by our parents, by our respective parents, to join the swim team at one point. Both Kelly and I were very good at swimming, and any kid who grew up in Indianola learned to swim very quickly, because the summers at the beach were nothing without being able to swim. So we were pushed onto the swim team in our little Speedos, and we were pretty good. We were pretty good, but Kelly hatched an idea at one time and asked the coach if he could go use the bathroom. And of course she said yes. Who's she, you know, how is she going to turn down a young man who needs to go to the restroom in the middle of swim practice? But Kelly didn't return to the pool. And I remember at one point when he did this during one practice, I was like, where did he go? So then I asked to go to the bathroom. And when I entered the locker room, there was Kelly, just sitting there on the bench, twiddling his thumbs and waiting for practice to get over. So that's what we did from then on. We would swim for about half an hour, maybe not even that. It was probably more like around 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Swim for 15 minutes. And then one of us would ask to go to the bathroom first, and we would stay there until the end of practice. Together, just hanging out. Enjoying each other's company in the locker room / restroom. I don't know what we talked about. We probably didn't talk about much. Probably just spent a lot of time scratching our feet because of all the athlete's foot that was going around. But I do remember it being fun. It was always fun. I remember the first day of seventh grade. Kelly walked on the bus. Now, this, mind you, was, let's see, had to have been 1992, 93. The Seattle alternative music scene, the grunge scene, was just getting kind of started and started ramping up. And I believe it was that summer. I don't know. I'd have to actually go back to the episode with Marco Collins. But Kelly and I spent that summer, I believe it was the summer before seventh grade, but, you know, if memory serves, that was the summer that we spent a whole day listening to this new radio station that had come on. Kelly had this nice little Walkman with a FM dial on it, and we spent all day walking around Indianola, going to and from each other's houses, listening to this weird radio station that was playing this amazing music. And it didn't have any commercials. It was like a canned radio station. And every once in a while, this voice would come on and say, "The end is coming." And then it would just go straight into a new song, from what I remember. And that first day of seventh grade, I remember Kelly Dickerson walking onto the bus in a flannel and a really sweet band t-shirt. Some band I had never heard of. And some, like, Converse All-Stars. Oh, man, did he look cool. His hair was a bit longer, too. I don't know how he achieved that, because we had just been hanging out a couple days before. But I looked down at myself, and I'm still wearing the same jeans that I had in sixth grade. Probably the same Adidas jacket, which were all the rage in sixth grade. And I remember getting off that bus, and a friend of ours, Chelsea Bergwin, another girl that we grew up with in the small town of Indianola, yelling at me as I walked through the door, my first day of seventh grade, totally terrified. And Chelsea Bergwin yells at me, "Hey, Aaron, waiting for the flood?" And I had no idea what she was talking about. I had no idea what she meant by that. But it turns out my jeans, although in fashion nowadays, were not in fashion back then. They were hiked up around my ankles, waiting for a flood. At that point, Kelly and I kind of lost touch a little bit during junior high. We would hang out from time to time. But Kelly, being the quiet person he was, and me trying to be the outgoing person and making friends and all that good stuff, we kind of grew apart a little bit. He made some of his own friends, got into the artsy crowd, right? I think I told you he was an amazing artist. He could draw anything, and was good at it. He could also carve and paint, do all sorts of stuff. And I couldn't really hold my own when it came to the arts. I could draw a good eyeball, but that was about it. But of course, once you get into those settings, you know, you meeting new people, you're separated by so many classes during the day, you know. And Kelly was gifted too. He was smart. So he got into the smart kid classes while I kind of stood behind and played the dumb card. I always thought it was cool back then to be stupid. And it kind of came back to bite me in the butt. Maybe I was stupid, and I was so stupid that I thought it was cool to be stupid. Try that one on. So we kind of lost touch for a little while. And then coming back into high school, we still had our separate friends. But I believe it was junior year. junior or senior year, we kind of reconnected, became part of the same circle once again. And it was nice. It felt familiar to me. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. But of course, in your high school years, sometimes some dark things happen. And we won't get into that. That's a story for another day. But he was a very close friend. He was a confidant of mine in those high school years. This song is called Schisma by my friend Kelly Dickerson and the Celibacy Club. We'll be right back. After high school was over, Kelly and I went our separate ways. I had left for college out to Ellensburg in the middle of the state of Washington, and Kelly stayed behind, trying his hand at going to school for a little while at Seattle Central Community College, doing some art programs. But as life happens, sometimes things don't work out, right? And Kelly floundered for a little while. Had some troubles, as we do. And we lost touch. I lost touch because I needed to get out of there. And I always think back to that time as, if I had stayed in the place I was at, would I even be talking on this microphone right now? I think probably not. And it was a good thing I left. And I always wanted to get back in touch with Kelly. Even ran into him at the store a couple of years back. And I called him once, too, and we talked on the phone for a little bit. However, he was kind of sick, so we didn't get to really reminisce or meet up. But I always kind of think, and I hope, that he had looked at our situation the same way. And that he had to leave that part of his life behind as well. Break ties with some of the people we were friends with. And if that meant us breaking ties, so be it. He had got his life back on track. By all accounts, he was doing very well. And became a commercial fisherman with his father, Darby Dickerson, on the 40-foot commercial fishing boat, the Maverick. On Friday, September 31st, 2012, at 4:30 a.m., Kelly was the only one up on the Maverick that morning. 35 or 30 miles off the coast of La Push in the Pacific Ocean. It was very, very foggy that day, but very calm seas. And Kelly was down in the engine room. Two boats were the only two boats in the vicinity. And they were drawn like magnets to one another. The 40-foot Maverick and another boat, a 90-foot fishing vessel known as the Viking Storm. The two boats collided, and a hole was ripped open in the Maverick, big enough for a car to drive through. And on Saturday, October 1st, 2012, 32-year-old Kelly Dickerson was presumed to be deceased and lost at sea. My heart breaks for him, his family, and all who knew him. You will be sorely missed, my friend. And I hope that this small token of my appreciation can be of some cosmic thank you to you and the experiences and memories that you have given me. So to all who knew him, and to those of whom are listening to this and gagging because I'm crying, I swear I'm trying to hold it together. To all of you listening to this, when you get home, tell your wife, your child, your mother that you love them. right? Because life is a fickle mistress. But if there is one thing that death can give us, is the appreciation of memory and love and friendship and Calvin and Hobbes and that first armpit hair that you ever found. We're going to close out the show today with a song of my choosing. It's called I Won't Be Found by the Tallest Man on Earth. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back next week with a new episode of the Air Raid Podcast. Goodbye to my friend, Kelly Dickerson. You will be missed. Thank you.
Well, if I ever see the morning, just like a lizard in the spring, I'm gonna run out in the meadow, to catch the silence where it sings. I'm gonna force the Serengeti, to disappear into my eyes. Then when I hear your voices calling, I'm gonna turn just inside now. Well, if I ever get to slumber, just like I'm all deep in the ground, hell, I won't be found. I grow a diamond in my chest. I make reflections as the moonshine, turn to a villain as I rest. Well, if I ever get to slumber, just like I'm all deep in the ground, hell, I won't be found. Hollow, I need to fill it with a draft of all the words that I won't say. And with a quiet whisper, I send a curse upon the day that never used the sun to see the light. I'm gonna float up in the ceiling. I built a levee of the stars, and in my field of tired horses, I built a freeway through this farce. Well, if I ever get that slumber, I'll be that mole deep in the ground.